We'll talk more about Dane Fife at 10:30 with Jim Comperoni from Spartan Mag. We're also going to talk with Dave Burkett at 10 o'clock from the Detroit Free Press, talking about the Detroit Lions and where they may go with the draft. And the reason we're talking so much about the draft today is because by the time our show starts next weekend, we'll already be three rounds into the draft. So we want to make sure that we cover the first round now, and then we will cover what they actually picked next week. So we're going to talk plenty more draft, plenty more Michigan State. Right now, I want to talk a little bit about the Detroit Tigers, who just finished their West Coast swing and are now back home at a very impressive win last night against the Chicago White Sox. Looked very good in that game. Bullpen looked good. Verlander, except for three stray pitches that all went out of the park, looked very good. The lineup looked good in general. I was very happy. And you know what? I'm not a Tigers fan. But if I was a Tigers fan, looking at their early schedule, I would be very happy with being 10-10 right now. You're on the road in New York. You're not going to take 2 or 3 there. Then you're taking on the Rangers. You take 2 or 3 from the Rangers, which was very good. Then you're on the road out west against Seattle and Oakland. And then you take on the White Sox. So to be 10-10 at this point, I think puts them in a very favorable position.
10-10 and not playing extremely well.
Yes.
That's the best part. The pitching staff is still, the ERA for the team is a little high.
Well, and not to mention, and I want to get this point out too, because Phil Koch's ERA right now is 2.75. That is not accurate. Because Phil Koch, in his last start, got charged for 2 of 6 runs, even though 3 of the runs, I can't remember which one it was, were from an error that he caused. And then the runs came in. However, he didn't get charged for it because there was an error, so they weren't earned runs. And then the last run that was scored, they charged an error to Cabrera because Cabrera had a throwing error at second base, which moves Sean Figgins to third. Now, what ended up happening was Cust then singled on the next at bat, drove Figgins in. However, it was one of those signals that Figgins was going to get in from second regardless of what was going on with the error. He just got in easily from third, but he still would have gotten in from second and driven in. So all 6 of those runs in 3 1/3 innings or whatever Koch had pitched that game should have gone to Koch. So Koch, who is their leading ERA guy as a starter, that's not even close to accurate.
Yeah, that's the problem with earned runs and runs, is that was not a good start. When you walk the bases low, walk guys in, that was just painful to start off with. But the one thing that I haven't given the Tigers credit for, really, I've ripped them apart for quite a while, and last night really changed my opinion. Alex Avila, I have to start giving him credit.
Starting to hit?
He is. Batting .292 right now.
Guy's starting to hit.
The thing is, he is so good behind the plate. Like, catchers don't need to be flashy, but if you just watch him, he's so confident with the pitching staff. The pitching staff is comfortable with him, which makes a huge difference. And he is very good defensively. And when he is getting pitched around now, that is unbelievable. Because I tweeted, like, fair warning, if you're following me on Twitter, and it is me, the at 1320, or what is it, at WILS Weekend Kick.
Yeah, and that's not me. I don't even know how to work Twitter.
Yeah, that is me. I'm not the most positive person in the world.
You're kidding.
Yeah, I know. Go figure. I'm extremely sarcastic and bitter on Twitter. I know, it's a shock. If you know me in real life, that's not my style at all. But when Burley got his first 2 strikeouts, it was Austin Jackson and Alex Avila, and I said, yep, those really shouldn't count because it's those two. Then Avila comes up and doubles off the wall, then doubles to the corner. And, you know, I just have to give him credit because he is so solid behind the plate. And if he can bat, I mean, even if he can bat .260, if he's down in the 8 or 9 spot, that's amazing.
He's only 24.
That's the best part.
And he's already got this amount of confidence and this ability to call pitches for his pitchers. Now, I will say this. Rick Porcello, who looked awful in his first couple of starts, has come on strong the last couple of starts. Scherzer has looked good from day one. Verlander is there. This rotation is starting to come into form, and as we talked about, Benoit and Valverde, if you give them a 2-run lead, they're not giving that up. Now, Valverde or Benoit may give up a run in those 8, 9 innings. However, overall, The Lions probably have a top five,
or
eight,
Tigers.
Nine situation. The Lions. the Tigers probably have a top five, 8-9 situation going on right now, relief pitching-wise.
Yeah, and it's funny because during one of the games, I got into a conversation on Twitter with somebody from the Free Press. I'm not sure who it was. I think it was the Freep Sports ID. I'm not sure who was behind it, if it was an intern or if it was a writer. Who knows? But we were talking about that because, and I said they tweeted a story how Joel Zumaya went on the extended DL. I think they put him on the 60-day DL. He might have to have surgery to find out if he needs surgery.
I'm done with Zumaya.
And that's what I said. I retweeted the story. I said, cut him now. He's never going to pitch again in the majors.
I'm done with Zumaya. In fact, I was done with Zumaya. I'll tell you exactly when I was done with Zumaya. When people caught on to his fastball and he couldn't throw a changeup, that was it. You know, I these relievers, you see them come in so much where people can't catch up to their fastball, like the Yankees couldn't in the playoffs, like other teams couldn't. But then once you figure that fastball out, once you see the guy two or three times and they don't have another pitch to go along with it, that's a major problem.
Point proven. Look at Carlos Quinton last night against Justin Verlander.
Correct.
When a major league hitter is looking for your fastball, it doesn't matter if you throw it 98 or 100, as Verlander did the pitch before in the fourth inning. If they're sitting on a fastball and it's not going to be moving, they can hit it and it's going to go a long ways.
Boy, Carlos Quinton looks good so far this year, doesn't he?
He's got so much power. He's been injured a few
times.
Those were
easy swings.
Oh yeah,
last night.
Oh,
easy
yeah.
swings on both of those home runs. Canerco's not so much, but go ahead.
Well, no, I'm getting back to where I was before with the relievers.
Yes.
And that started the conversation of they then asked me if I thought the Tigers could win the division without Zumaya. And I said, well, I didn't think they would originally. I always picked the Twins, but I was talking and we were trying to figure out who was there because, as they noted, that bridge from the starters to Benoit Valverde is very creaky. I mean, Ryan Perry just came back, and he's the option to go to right now with the situational Schlereth. But I don't know how much faith I can put in Ryan Perry just yet. And that is the problem with the Tigers, because after Verlander and Scherzer, I mean, Porcello's okay, but I don't like a young guy who pitches
can't,
the contact.
Porcello can't go seven innings.
Exactly. That's the problem. You have to have starters go seven to be able to hand it off to the back end, because you don't want to throw out the Albuquerque or
I know what you're talking about. Absolutely. Or Villarreal, you know, he's not a bad pitcher, but he's not great. A lot of those guys in the bullpen, they're going to eat up innings, but they're not fantastic pitchers. I look at the road coming up for the Tigers. They've got a very crucial stretch coming up. They have two more at home against the White Sox. Then they've got three at home against Seattle. They should sweep that series.
Seattle?
Actually, as I'm looking at it, yeah. Actually, I'm looking at it because Hernandez takes on Coke, so maybe not sweep that series, but they should definitely take two or three. And then they've got a crucial series at Cleveland, because Cleveland, you want to destroy their hopes before they get up too high. You don't want the Cleveland Indians starting to believe the record that they have right now. So if you can squash the Indians with a sweep at Cleveland, that's crucial, because then after that you take on the Yankees, and, you know, whatever happens with the Yankees happens. Then you go at Toronto, whatever happens there happens there. But this is a pretty big stretch coming up for the Tigers, and if they can take probably all but two of these games, I think that puts them in a great position to make a run for the rest of this year. I really do.
Well, I think they're in good shape right now. Coming off that road stretch, though, anytime you go out west, I don't care for it. Just because it is so tough to do, because the pitching's good out there. I mean, take the travel away, but the Oakland A's, their starting rotation is the best in the majors right now, statistically speaking.
Yes.
And then if you can come back now and finally get into the division, and you're right, I have no respect for any teams in the AL Central right now.
No.
So you should be able to just do a ton of damage. And you're right, if you let the Indians get through April and into...
Especially if the Twins keep struggling, and so the Indians don't see them as a threat, I think the Kansas City Royals will fade off. I think it's been a great run for them. I think it's been great that Gordon and Francoeur are driving in runs, but at the same time, I think they will fade off. So it comes down to a point where you got White Sox, Tigers, and the Indians sitting there saying, you know what? I think now that Sizemore is back, now that Hafner's hitting, we've got a shot.
Well, you give all those young guys the confidence of, hey, we're doing this. This is, if you're 2 months in and you're still, and Justin Masterson still has an ERA yep. of under three and is winning games, and Chris Perez
and
is saving games.
Carmona starts pitching
exactly.
a little bit better, then they are in a pretty good situation. So, you know, this is a crucial stretch coming up for the Tigers. And unlike a lot of people, I do think games this early in the season matter. I do. Now, do I think you can look too much into a losing streak? Do I think you can look too much into a hitting slump at the beginning of a year? No. But overall, if you're losing two of three to Kansas City, those are wins that you can't get back at the end of the year. And so, although it seems not important, these are important games at the beginning of the season.
It makes little to no sense the way I view it. I don't think losses at the beginning of the season are that bad unless, like, a couple years ago when they lost their first nine in a row or whatever it was. But I think wins are extremely important. Like, if you were to start off like the Rockies. Yeah, I know. I told you. It makes no sense.
I'm trying to picture
exactly
this in my
opposite.
Mind.
The losses don't matter, but the wins do.
Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Psychologically, to me, it makes a big difference. Because you can come back from the losses. Okay. It's easier to think that way. Of,
I see
you
what
know,
you're saying.
We've lost some, but we can make this up. But if you're already ahead with the wins.
I see what you're saying.
You can roll with that.
Because you sit there and say, man, if we've won this many already, imagine how well we're going to do.
Well, look at what the Rockies did. What they start off with. 10-2.
The Rockies make a run in September every
exactly.
single year.
And now they're already that much ahead to start off with. That's money in the bank.
As a Yankees fan, I've always felt that wins early on are important because the Yankees have a tendency early on to lose games to a struggling Rays team, to lose games to a Baltimore Orioles team that they have no business losing games to. Then they beat the Red Sox and things of that nature, but they dig themselves a hole by losing these games that they should win because eventually the Red Sox are going to play those teams and the Red Sox are going to beat those teams. So I am a big believer that a team needs to win games early in the season and losing can hurt you. Now, if some of your hitters are hitting 150, I'm not too worried about that because the law of averages say by the end of the year, look at a Mark Teixeira, look at a Robinson Cano, their averages are going to get up there by the end of the year. So a guy like Austin Jackson, I'm not worried yet. However, I will be worried if by the end of this month, if he's not consistently getting hits each game, his average doesn't have to be super raised, but if he's not consistently going 1-for-4, 1-for-5 in games, now I'm worried. Now I'm worried. Because Ofers, for a long time, even though your average is not that great with a 1-for-5 day, at least you finish the day going, you know what, I got a hit. And in Jackson's mind, he probably scores a run too. But if he's not getting on base, if he's going 0-for every single game, that's a problem for his psyche as well as the lineup.
Well, I did the numbers. I did the math. I sent it to you. I think that was back on Monday. And I looked through all the leadoff hitters in the league. He had the fifth worst on-base percentage. And that was taken into account Brett Gardner, who got moved out of the leadoff role for the Yankees.
I think Brett Gardner is like 6-for-50 so far
this
year.
Exactly. Brian Roberts, who his average is a lot higher.
Yep.
Coco Crisp, who's getting on base and stealing bases. Ian Desmond, who got moved out of the leadoff role in Washington. I think those were the, was that all four? Right there. Those were the four who were below him.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I look right now and his on-base percentage for Austin Jackson, he's batting 162, on-base 244.
So he's drawing some walks.
A little bit. He's on-base one out of every four times.
Yeah.
That is not nearly what it should be. I mean, it needs to be 100-plus points higher.
But this has been the problem with the Tigers for a long time. They haven't had a leadoff hitter for a really long time.
Well, and that's why I did the math, because I'm looking. I go, okay, well, who can they go out and get as a leadoff hitter? And it's not like there's fantastic leadoff hitters out there in the majors right now. There's some guys who have decent numbers, but there's not great guys that you can put at the top of your lineup.
Yeah, so the Tigers, you know, they don't have great leadoff hitters, they never have, but it would be nice if a guy you brought in gave up Curtis Granderson to be a leadoff hitter. It'd be nice if he got some leadoff hits. That's all we're saying.
Well, not just that, but it goes along with what you're saying. Put the ball in play.
Yep.
He strikes out. He pulls off the ball so much. It is so frustrating to see.
Yes. All right, when we come back, we'll talk a little to Junkbin. It's Weekend Kickoff, 1320 WILS.